been our desire this quarter to take a practical look at some of the things in the life of Jesus, some of the events in his own life, and some of the teachings in his own life, and to be able to look at these in such a way to say, what can I do in my life to learn to be more like Jesus? I hope that that is the goal of each and every one of us here. That we're not here to learn to be more like Mike or more like Brittany or more like whoever, but that we're here to learn to be more like Jesus in order that on a daily and an hourly basis, we can be doing those things, thinking those things, and saying those things that would be pleasing to God. We're not trying to say in this study this quarter that we can or ever will in every way be just like Jesus. But is there any reason that we shouldn't, in these things that we've been talking about this quarter, give it our all? To have the mind that Christ had, that's what we talked about, learning to think like he did in order that we might act and do those things that he did. And what we talked about for the last couple weeks on the matter of having the love for the scripture that he had. But I want us to talk about tonight, and this will also probably be a two-part study, but to talk about how did Jesus treat other people. We're going to spend probably, it may be the rest of the quarter, looking at what I really look at as a sub-theme of this, and that is, what did Jesus do to reach the lost? If we're going to reach the lost and have the concern for the lost that Jesus had, first of all, we've got to have the mind that Jesus had and think like he did, and we've done that. We've got to have a love for the scripture, but it sort of starts even beyond that with learning to treat people like Jesus did. We're not going to have opportunities to teach people the gospel if we don't treat them like Jesus did. You know, and I know, that in order for us to have an opportunity to actually sit down and study the Bible with somebody, that it all starts with what happens before that study. Before, most of the time, I can ask somebody to study with me, if I have treated them unfairly, if I have treated them harshly, if I have treated them in an ungodly manner, what desire are they ever going to have to sit down and study the Bible with me? None. What respect are they even going to have for me as a Christian? What respect are they going to have for my God or for his church or anything if my behavior turns them off? And folks, that's a huge responsibility we have. Before we can ever fulfill the great commission of teaching the gospel, we've got to set the atmosphere, we've got to set the foundation for it, in a lot of ways, by the way that we act and by the way that we treat other people. How does the typical American today treat other people? Badly. How would you describe? Not bad?
Indifferent?
Here's an average American. How are they going to treat a stranger?
Depends on what part of the country.
Depends on what part of the country you're from. What are you trying to say, Jerry?
If you go to Wisconsin, they'll treat you pretty good.
Okay.
Parts of the country.
So it's just those southern. No, it's. Is that true? Depends on what part of the country you're from. Is South Florida a little bit different than rural Mississippi? Just slightly. So, does that change the way we treat one another? Apparently, it changes the way some people treat each other. How do the typical people around us treat each other? Rude? Why are they rude? Why are people rude?
They're inconsiderate.
What?
Most people in America today look at everybody else around. They look at everybody else around them through the blinders of what's best for me. You know, what infringes on my rights, what's best for me, and then I'll take care of what everybody else is. Or what's best for me, as long as you don't get in my way, you can do whatever you want. But whatever is important to me is the most important.
Okay. Are these comments true, that I'm looking out for me and I'm concerned about me, and so the way I treat you is going to be determined in a large part by what's best for me?
Self-centered.
How does the typical person treat the person working the drive-through? Huh? And here's a typical car that goes through the drive-thru. How are they treating that person that's taking your money and giving you the food? Or behind the counter? I've seen some of the worst behavior in fast food restaurants and around them. You know, just inconsiderate. But not just on the customer's part. I've been in McDonald's where you got the person working behind the register, it's chewing you out or yelling at the customers. That's good for business, isn't it? Jerry?
I had a case, I was kind of surprised by it, but, you know, when you pull up to the turnpike and pay your toll, I usually say, how you doing, you know? And this person said back to me, I'm fine, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great. And she said, wow, that's the first time I've ever heard that from somebody.
You know, how often are we nice to just the most, what we would think of the most insignificant person at a toll booth? I mean, we don't know them. They don't know us. How often are we just polite to these people? And does that even matter if we are? Does it matter? Okay, we could spend all night talking about how the typical American or how the typical South Floridian or typical this or that treats each other. And we're going to come down to we treat each other pretty poorly. And unfortunately, we sitting right here are not exempt. We're not exempt from receiving that treatment. And sometimes we don't exempt ourselves from giving that kind of treatment. And that's what we need to talk about. Learning to treat other people the way that Jesus treated other people. And what I want to do tonight, next week, assuming we've got time to finish this tonight, next week we're going to look at what Jesus taught about how to treat other people. There's tons of what Jesus taught. But the first thing I want to do is to look at what Jesus did. To actually look at how Jesus treated other people. We've mentioned this verse before, but Acts chapter 1 and verse 1. Luke says, he's writing this and he says, the former treatise I made unto thee, O Theophilus, talking about the Gospel of Luke, he's referring back to that and he says, the former treatise I made unto thee, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. And we mentioned that passage. This is one of the instances when you start talking about how Jesus treated people. This is one of the instances where you can look at what Jesus did. Both what he did in treating other people as well as what did he teach us? What did he teach others in how to treat one another? And I think the import of that verse in Acts 1 and verse 1 is the order that Luke gives it, that Jesus did things and then there was an occasion for him to teach others to do those things. It was not just that Jesus was teaching people to do something and then he did it, but in large part it was that Jesus was already doing these things before he taught about it, so his example was already there. And so that's what I want us to look at tonight, is that example of Jesus. The example of his life, looking at some instances in his life and how he treated others. And some of the instances I want us to look at tonight, you know, we may think are insignificant, or we may look at them and say, I don't know if I could do that in that same situation. And that's really what we need to be asking ourselves. You know, if I'm faced with this same person, and we're not going to look tonight, I don't think, maybe I put one in here, but we're not going to look tonight, we're going to look later on about those people that came and challenged Jesus. I guess we are going to look at one. But you think about all those times that folks came and challenged Jesus, asking him questions in order they might test him and trying to trip him up and think, you know, how would you react? How would you treat those people? You know, if you were the Son of God and had the powers to perform miracles like he did, what would you do to them? You know, remember what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? Remember what the end result for Nebuchadnezzar was? Eating grass? Remember what happened to his hands? Remember what happened to his hair? Did Jesus have the ability to do that to one of these knuckleheads that came along and tried to trip him up? Yeah, okay, you want to ask me that question? Guess what? You're eating grass for the rest of your life. How do we treat people? How did Jesus treat people? First thing we've got to look at is that before we ever look at how he treated somebody, what was in his heart? What was in his heart to begin with? Love and compassion. If you have a heart filled with love and compassion, will that affect how you treat somebody? It affected how Jesus treated somebody. If you have a heart that is lacking love and compassion, is it going to be hard for you to treat other people like Jesus treated them? Is it going to be hard for you to treat others with compassion if your heart is not full of love and compassion? And so you start here and you begin to look at the heart that Jesus had. Here's, anybody want to pronounce this Greek word for compassion? Splanknizomai? All right, that's the Greek word. You're going to be tested on that at the end of the quarter, so memorize that right now, okay? The word means that I am moved to my inward parts. That's what compassion means. Doesn't mean that I feel sorry for somebody. Doesn't just mean, oh boy, feel bad for them. They're having a rough time. It means that those feelings move me down to my very inward parts. The root word for this is the word for bowels. It's having concern and feelings for someone to the point that my inner guts start to feel it. You ever had that? You ever had that kind of concern for someone else? Maybe it was a parent, maybe it was a child, to where your compassion for them, maybe they were ill, maybe they were having a hard time, maybe whatever was happening in their life, to the point that you almost got sick. Because it wasn't just something, well, you know, I feel kind of bad for them. Glad it's not me. But to the point that your concern got all the way down into your bowels to where you were feeling deeply all the way inside. Folks, that's Jesus. It's not just some superficial, well, he feels bad for somebody. When you read in the Bible that Jesus had compassion, every time you read Jesus had compassion, it's that same word. And it's interesting some of the times that it says that he had that compassion. Proverbs 23:7. I didn't mean to put that up there. You know what it says? Now you do, because I just put it up there. As he thinks in his heart, what? So is he. Comes back to this mindset, I cannot treat somebody else the way Jesus treated them if my heart is not there. I could start to, you know, I could get close to, but boy, if they said one more thing that would just set me off, then, just watch out. Then I don't have the heart for it. If I'm going to treat others the way Jesus did, I've got to learn to try to have that kind of heart. Try to have that kind of inward compassion for other people. We see it throughout his life. First of all, we see it for some people who had physical infirmities. Look in Matthew chapter 15. Quickly, we're going to look at several passages, so get your Bibles and let me hear my favorite sound. Y'all are just doing that. You're not even turning to Matthew 15. You're just like flipping around just to fool me. I know the difference, okay? Matthew 15. You start in verse 32. Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, I have compassion on the multitude. He's not just saying, oh, I feel sorry for him. This is splanknizomai. This is right down to my inwards, my guts, my bowels, I have compassion on these people. Why? Because they have now continued with me 3 days and they have nothing to eat and I do not want to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way. Why is he concerned about them? Why does he have compassion on these people? They're hungry. Haven't had anything to eat. And here his disciples say, hey, get rid of these people. And Jesus says, you know what? I'm not getting rid of these people. You know, if they start leaving and they start fainting, guess who that's on? That's on me. I'm not going to allow that to happen. See, the thing with compassion, the difference between compassion as it's used here about Jesus and somebody feeling sorry for somebody else is I can feel sorry for somebody else and do absolutely nothing about it. Oh boy, glad that's not me. I can feel sorry for them. I can have pity all day long for them and do zero to help them. That's not the compassion of Jesus. The compassion of Jesus will not allow him to have those inward feelings to the point where he does zero to help them. Here he says, I've got compassion for them because they haven't had anything to eat. And what does he do? He does everything he can to fulfill the need that they have in their hunger. He feeds them. What does Jesus say about us feeding other people? Say, speak up, feed the people. I heard that up here. What does Jesus say about feeding people? Matthew chapter 25, if you do this unto even the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. Okay? What does Jesus talk about bringing a cup of cold water? Here's somebody who's maybe considered the least in the kingdom, but I bring them a cup of cold water. In whose name am I doing that? In my name? So I can get the credit? So I can say, hey, look at me. That was me. I brought them a cup of cold water. Pat me on the back. No, if you bring a cup of cold water in my name. For my sake. And when we start looking at some of these instances in the life of Jesus, what am I doing for people who are in need? And I'm not just talking about those who are hungry. But for people that we know who have physical infirmities, who have physical problems, who have hunger, whatever it is. I'm not a doctor, you know. I'm not a magician. I'm not a nurse, so I can't help out in that respect. But what can I do? Here's a member who's in need. Here's Don and Janet Hickerson. Have you heard any announcements made in this building? Have you seen anything in the bulletins that have said, Don and Janet Hickerson are not doing well, they're in need of food? Have you seen that second part that says they're in need of food? I don't think we've said it or published it, to my knowledge. I don't think we've done it. Is the second part of that statement true? How would we know? Let's see. I've got a husband and a wife who are both not doing well. If I feel sorry for them, what do I do? Oh man, I'm glad that's not me. I can't imagine if both my husband and my wife, boy, that'd be sorry, wouldn't it, to have a husband and a wife. I can't imagine if my spouse and I were both down and out and having the problems that I just can't imagine if that was me. Boy, I'm glad it's not. That's feeling sorry for them. If I have compassion that Jesus has, what do I do when I hear an announcement, or when I read in the bulletin, when I read in family news? What do I do? Do you know why sometimes we put phone number, that's what it's called, in the family news? So you don't have to go find your directory. It's an immediate, hey, look at that. I can call them right now. And I'm not just talking about Don and John, I'm talking about anybody. That here's somebody and a need hasn't been expressed, and so we have a mentality that says, well, nobody said they've got a need, so I don't need to do anything. Hello? What did Jesus say? What did Jesus talk about doing unto others? What did Jesus talk about doing unto them and you're doing it unto me? What did he talk about taking a cup of cold water, not for any credit, but because there's a need? Do we have the heart of compassion that Jesus had? Flip over to chapter 20. We see the same word in chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20 and verse 29. Now as they went out of Jericho, a great multitude followed him, and behold, two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. Then the multitude warned them that they should be quiet, but they cried out all the more, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. So Jesus stood still and called to them and said, What do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Did he have to stop? I mean, he's got his armored guard protecting him. Oh, just shut up. Be quiet. Jesus could... Have you ever heard somebody protecting you from somebody else? Or, you know, you can kind of hear, oh yeah, I don't have to look over there because I'm not even going to look there. Jesus could have said, la, 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 I just got to keep going. No, he stops. And then look at the question. What do you want me to do for you? I'm not saying we've got the ability to give anybody sight. Anybody got that ability? I'd like to talk to you afterwards. I'm tired of contacts, all right? You know, we don't have the ability. Do we have the ability to say, what do you want me to do for you? And here he has compassion on him. And then what does it say? It says the same thing. Look in Mark chapter 1. You're going to see the same word that you just saw in Matthew chapter 20 over in Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1, beginning of verse 40. Now a leper came to Jesus, imploring him, kneeling down to him, and saying to him, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand. You got the same word compassion. Those same inward feelings that I cannot not do anything. Does that make sense? That double negative confuse you? I can't stand here and not allow myself to do something. He's got those deep inward feelings to the point that this... Can you imagine meeting a leper? He meets this leper, and this leper comes to him, and this leper says, man, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Jesus was moved with compassion. He stretched out his hand, and what did he do? Same thing he did to these blind guys in Matthew 20. What does he do? The ultimate thing you don't want to do with a leper. That's the last thing you want to do with a leper, isn't it? I mean, yell at him and tell him to stay on the other side of the road. But man, don't get near him. And if you got to get near him, don't let him breathe on you. And if that's... Don't touch him. He reached out his hand and touched him. What application does that have for us? Is there a hand up over here, or am I seeing things? Everybody's looking. Oh, is that you? Is that you? No. What application does that have for us? Touching the unclean. What application does that have? Sometimes you got to put yourself at risk. What does that mean? I mean, for what purpose? What did you say, Nicole? A hands-on job. Get in there, get dirty. See, this might not be talking about we meet a leper on the side of the road. This might be talking about somebody has a need. And instead of me having a hands-off approach that says, boy, they got a need, but you know, I just don't have the time. Did I get in there and I do something with it, Trina?
You have to look past the external and see that there's a spirit there that needs, that's hurting and needs to be loved. You know.
You got Trina says you got to look past the external. And see, there's somebody there who needs to be loved. How long had it been since this leper had been touched by somebody? Man, can you imagine being unclean? Can you imagine his situation? He shouldn't have even been here. Jesus reaches out and touches him, and he cleanses him. To the point that he can go, that he can be not only cleansed physically, but he can go to the temple and go to the priest and have all of this taken care of so that he can be reinstated into society. Because there was somebody who had enough compassion on him. And then there's the fact that Jesus had compassion on those who were grieving. You know John chapter 11 about Lazarus. Look in Luke chapter 7 real quick. Look in Luke chapter 7, beginning of verse 11. It happened the day after that he went into the city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him in a large crowd. And he came near the gate of the city. Behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. He doesn't feel bad for her. He doesn't feel sorry for her. It's not a superficial boy. That's got to be hard. Down in his inward parts, he has compassion on her. Why? What's her problem? Her son's dead. Maybe he's supporting her. Who does she got left? Nobody. He sees this woman, he has compassion on her, and said to her, do not weep. Then he came and, look at it, touched, same word, touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still, and he said, young man, I say to you, arise. So he who was dead sat up and began to speak. Can you imagine that? You imagine that widow? seeing her dead son sit up. And folks, think about when Jesus raised somebody from the dead. When Jesus raises some from the dead, they apparently they don't come back groggy. All right? Apparently they don't come back and they need to go take a nap or something. They come back 100%. He sits up and begins to speak. You know, we go to the hospital to see somebody. Well, they're coming around. You come back tomorrow and maybe you can talk to them for a little while. Uh-uh. This guy comes back from the dead, sits up and begins to speak. Why does this happen? Because Jesus had compassion. Anybody in here got the ability to raise the dead? Man, y'all are. What abilities do you have? You can't heal the blind people. You can't raise the dead. What are you going to do? What are you going to do for somebody who's had a loved one die? You can't raise the dead. Okay, so what short of that? You can pray for them. You're going to comfort them. You're going to share their burden. What are we saying over here? What did you say, Novell?
Teach them the gospel.
Teach them the gospel? Now, why would you do that, Novell? They're grieving the loss of love. And why are you going to bring the gospel into it? Hello? Can you look at these things up here and recognize that, hey, get back up there. When Jesus was concerned about people's physical infirmities, we're going to see this in a minute. Why was he concerned about their physical infirmities? Why did he show compassion for their physical infirmities? Because he wanted them physically to be well? If you get the physical part right and you show compassion for the physical part, what's going to happen with the spiritual part? We only got a couple minutes. I want to get through some of these. Not only the physical, Jesus had compassion for spiritual infirmities. There's several of these. I'm just going to put some of these up. Look at Matthew chapter 9. This is my favorite one. Well, maybe. I don't know if it's my favorite one. Matthew chapter 9. Jesus went about, verse 35. He went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and he was healing every sickness and every disease among the people. Don't run over those two everys there. He's there. He's not only teaching, he's healing every sickness and every disease. Verse 35, Jesus is taking care of their physical infirmities. Verse 36, but when he saw the multitudes, this is not the first time he saw the multitudes, he's been right there with them, he's been healing them. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, same word, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. What's he concerned about? Their soul. And here they are wandering about like sheep that have no shepherd, and he's concerned that they need direction in their life. Where are they going to get that? From the 700 Club? Where are they going to get that? They're looking right at him in the face. Jesus met their physical needs in order that Jesus might have an opportunity to meet their spiritual needs. When somebody passes away, when we have had the number of funerals that we've had in the last few weeks, when we've had the number of people in the hospital that we have had, are there opportunities to help meet some physical needs in order that we might have an opportunity to meet spiritual needs? Why is it so often that even at funerals, the gospel is preached at the funeral? Why is that? Is that just, you know, so that we can get another sermon in? Let's see, are we thinking about the brevity of life? Are we thinking about our own mortality? Yeah. And is there a captive audience? Where are they going to go? Are there people who need to hear the gospel? By the dozens. We try to comfort and soothe their physical grief and emotions in order that we might meet some of their spiritual. In Matthew chapter 14, Jesus, look in Mark chapter 6. We don't have time for Matthew 14. But this is, we've already looked at the occasion where Jesus was feeding the 4,000. In Matthew 14 as well as Mark chapter 6, Jesus is feeding the 5,000. But I want you to look at Mark chapter 6 particularly as he's feeding the 5,000, verse 34, Mark 6:34. Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude, and he's moved with compassion for them. Why? Because they're hungry, right? That's not what this verse says. He's going to feed the 5,000. He's concerned about the spirit, the physical needs, but he's moved with compassion for them because they were like a sheep not having a shepherd. So what did he do? Look at the last sentence of verse 34. He began to teach them many things. If you have folks over for dinner who are not members of the church, is it improper for you to talk to them about the gospel? You got book, chapter, and verse, Jesus' example of him feeding people physically in order that he might feed them spiritually. What should be our number one goal with those who have spiritual needs? Doing all we can to meet them. And that's what we see in the life of Jesus. We see in Luke chapter 7. Look in Luke chapter 7. We're going to come back to some of these because I want to spend more time on these. Look in Luke chapter 7 again, starting in verse 36. Jesus comes into the house of Simon. This is not Simon Peter. Comes into this house of Simon, one of the Pharisees. Luke 7, verse 36. This Simon had asked him to eat with him. So he went to his house and he sat down to eat. Verse 37. Behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner. I'm sure she was the only woman in that city who was a sinner. A woman in the city who was a sinner. When she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of fragrant oil. And this is not uncommon when you got open doors and open windows. There were folks in and out of houses. But she comes to this house, brings an alabaster flask of fragrant oil, and stood at his feet behind him weeping. I want you to get this scene. She comes to this house. She knew Jesus was sitting, verse 37, at the table. She brings an alabaster flask of fragrant oil. She stood at his feet behind him weeping. And then she began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with the fragrant oil. Now when the Pharisee Simon, who had invited him, saw this, he spoke to himself saying, if you're in the presence of Jesus, does it matter if you're speaking to yourself or not? Nope. Too bad. This man, if he were a prophet, talking about Jesus, if this guy in my house were a prophet, he would know who and what manner of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner, and I'm not. He doesn't say that, but that's his mindset. She's a sinner, and I'm not. Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. Would anybody be so bold as to say, well, I don't want to hear it? No, not even this guy. Teacher, say it. Verse 41. There was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely forgave them both. Tell me, Simon, therefore, which of them will love him more? Simon answered and said, well, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. Kind of a silly question, don't you think? And he said to him, you have rightly judged. Then he turned to the woman and he said to Simon, he turns to the woman. He's looking at the woman, but he's speaking to Simon. And what does he say? Do you see this woman? You see this woman who you say is a sinner? You see this woman who you say I shouldn't even be around? You see this woman who you say, well, if he was really a prophet, he'd know who and what manner of woman this was, and he wouldn't let her do it. You see this woman, he says? I entered your house. And all of the customary things for the host to do for the guest, you did zero. Mr. Simon, on your little high pedestal here, who's looking down at this woman who's a sinner and saying all of these evil things against her, I entered your house as a guest, and the customary things to do for a guest, you did nothing. This woman, he says, I entered your house, you gave me no water for my feet. You didn't wash my feet. I'm walking around in these dusty roads all day. You didn't wash no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. And you think you're better than her? You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. And you think you're better than her? You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore, I say to you, Simon, Her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, you can almost hear it. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Then he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Here's this woman who comes in and begins to wash his feet. And here's Simon, who thinks that he knows better. What does Jesus do for this woman? I want you to put yourself where Jesus was. Put yourself where Simon was. What would have been the manly thing to do against this woman who's come in and, you know, done all of this? Jesus could have put her in her place just like that, couldn't he? Had the right as a man, had the right as a teacher. I mean, he could have. Here's this woman who is a sinner. And how does he treat her? Like a friend. Gently. Why does he do that? Because he's got compassion. Because he's got a heart. Was that two? Where was one? 5 minutes ago. Yeah, right. He treated people with respect. Even a woman washing his feet. Treated her like a friend. But notice at the same time, was not hesitant to put Simon in his place. Stan?
This woman is not a Gentile. She is a Jew. Therefore, the counterpart is, he's talking about members of the church, the way they treat each other.
Sure. When you start looking at the fact that she's a Jew, here's an application that says, how are we treating each other? We're not talking about some stranger out on the street. How do you treat one another? And is it a fact, and we'll come back to this, do we sometimes, even among brethren, say, well, I'm up there, and they're the kind of down there somewhere because they're not as good as me. What did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 23? He who exalts himself shall be humbled. Guess what? To him that thinketh he standeth, better watch out. You're going to fall flat on your face. All right, we're going to come back to this next time and then talk about what Jesus taught on these matters.